Ready to go.
All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome to I Can't Make This Stuff Up. I'm here this morning with Leonard Clifton, an amazing author. He has some really awesome things to talk about this morning. We talk to real people with true stories that have a powerful effect on real lives, and I think we have the right guy this morning. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. Clifton, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, your book, and your inspiration for it.
Well, first I'd like to say thank you for having me. My name is Leonard Clifton, of course, author, Last Prince Atlantis Chronicles. I've been writing for about 6 years now, and it started when just one day it hit me. I was watching Twilight for some reason, and that's when it dawned on me that for young adults, like movies and books, when it like Harry Potter, Twilight, Hunger Games, there's no black protagonist characters in it. Even as a biracial, multicultural main characters, they have, you know, sort of, you know, a little bit, you know, co-stars, but they're not the protagonist characters. So I decided, you know what, I'm gonna create one. And I come from an acting background, never written before. I never went to school for literature. I went to school for acting, for theater arts. So I just started writing, and I always had this story of Atlantis, about the lost city of Atlantis in me. I was named after Leonard Nimoy, you know, the guy who plays Spock from Star Trek.
I love that.
And he had a show, it was like a kind of like a documentary show. I remember watching it as a kid. They should play it forever. It was called In Search Of. And one of the episodes I had was about the lost city of Atlantis. Now, I remember vividly as a kid, they were talking about the city, where it was located, where they thought it was, somewhere in the Caribbean, not in Greece. You know, Plato talked about it. But towards the end of the show, the segment, I remember seeing these black kids in the Caribbean playing, and I heard Leonard Nimoy's voiceover saying, "Are these the descendants of Atlantis?" And that always stayed with me. So fast forward to about 30-something odd years, you know, when I saw the Twilight, when I started writing the story, and I had a muse to play the Greek, like the love interest. She's a Greek goddess. She's a socialite, but she's a Greek goddess. So it's a love story between this character, Alan, this 15-year-old kid who discovers that he's from Atlantis, and Athena, who's related to Plato. She has an unpublished book about the kingdom still exists. Mm-hmm. But there's no people that as far as she knows, is still around. So basically, this book was passed down from generation to generation. From Plato's family. So when Athena has it, she just comes across this Alan Keating character, and everything kind of takes place, and it's a big worldwide journey. And that's why I'm a little jet lag coming back from Africa, because I just finished the documentary part I'm doing also for the book.
You got to tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, well, it started off about a year ago. I started off in Australia. A lot of the characters are from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Alan character, he teleports from Miami to Australia, and that's when he meets Athena, and then he finds out about his origin. And when Athena tells him about where he comes from and who he is, he finds out that he's part Zulu, alien, you know, from a faraway planet, and he's Mediterranean, like from the Iberian Peninsula, sort of, you know, European. So it looks sort of kind of like a Derek Jeter look.
Okay.
Once he finds the necklace, his eyes change from brown to a blue-green color. And that's when the alien kind of trait starts set in his body. So I was doing a documentary from the Sydney Opera House, where I started off. That's where he teleported to from Miami. Then I went to the Great Barrier Reef a couple of days later, and I did my kind of research there, because the book talks about historical fiction as well, such as, you know, global warming, climate change, and right now the coral reef, the bleaching of the reefs. I wrote about this 6 years ago, and so I'm just following the footsteps of what I wrote. From the original book, I hired a screenwriter from the Breaking Bad TV show.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. So as she was editing the original book, because we're making it a three-book series, I decided I have to make it authentic, and that's the reason why I traveled around the world, so I can have detailed description of where the characters live and what they do. So after Australia, about 4 months later, I headed to Greece. So I went to Greece and documented the detailed characters for Zeus. Zeus narrates the story in a new book.
Okay.
And finishing off after doing that, I wanted to say the best for last, which was in Africa, because the origin starts in Africa. So I was in South Africa for a week. So I finished completing the documentary that I was shooting, because I wanted people, the readers, to see the worldwide visual of the book. I mean, as they read it, but they see it in real time by me being there and from my social media pages.
You seem to go from reality with your documentaries back to fantasy, back to the book.
Yeah.
A lot in this process. How does that work for you? Is that, where did you get that method of that transition back and forth to be able to produce your final product?
They have the fantasy and historical fiction. I don't, it just came naturally. I can't explain it. I did a book signing at the Grove, Barnes & Noble, 2 years ago for Black History Month. I was the first there ever have a book signing, being a self-published author from the original book.
Okay.
At that Barnes & Noble at the Grove. And I was explaining that there's things that I just know I can't explain from my mother's side of the family. They're clairvoyants. It's just interesting, but I have a natural love for the ocean and just for an environment. And I wanted to have that in there, just kind of written, not too preachy, so to speak, but I wanted to have the reality on top of the fantasy, if that makes sense.
It does. When did you find out about your mother's side of the family and their talents, and how much of that do you feel like you possess?
I knew that pretty much all of my life. My mother's side of the family is they're Native American Cherokee. My great grandmother was a little bit of clairvoyant. Definitely my mother and my sister, my middle sister. I think they have the gifts a little bit stronger than me. But when I was writing a book, I was literally channeling the characters. It was like the characters telling me what to do. I was just writing for a period of 6 months, the original book, for close to 12 to 18 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You were in it. Tell us a little bit more about your trip to Africa. I'm definitely interested in that. I think our listeners would love to hear a little bit more about that trip.
That was the most surreal experience I had in my life. Me being a Black man, Black American, I've never been to Africa before, and that's another reason why I'm thankful for this book that I wrote, that allowed me to kind of walk in the footsteps of the characters and where they live. So going to Africa, especially in South Africa, was, I stayed in Cape Town, was an experience. Everyone's saying, oh, be careful, there's a drought. You know, there's gonna be water shortages. I didn't see any of that. So they do have a drought, but they had some bit of rain. But as soon as I arrived, I was welcomed. I met with a videographer there. But one thing I had to learn, because I didn't know, because the characters were Zulu. There's a lot of tribes in South Africa. I found out about like the Xhosa, which is Mandela's tribe. Mm-hmm. And seeing the European culture with the African, now the African, I would say the influence is sort of coming back. There's a lot of, you know, Black presidents. Now they have South Africa. I think they now have the fourth Black president.
Right.
But the tribes, I learned about, some tribes don't get along. I didn't know that. Like with Zulus and the Xhosas, some people think the Zulus are kind of, they're warriors. They come from a warrior background. I was a big Shaka Zulu fan.
I was just about to ask you about that.
Yeah, I was a big Shaka Zulu fan growing up, and that's how the Zulu came about. I met with a Zulu chief that's on my YouTube channel. Leonard Clifton, you can go through leonardclifton.com and you can click onto any of the YouTube pages I have on the author's bio.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I spoke to this gentleman, this short man, most Zulus are tall, but this guy was a short, small, slender man, 70 years old. He had so much knowledge about Shaka Zulu and Table Mountain, which is I wrote about in the book, where the Zulu met the aliens on top of the Table Mountain. It's the newest seven wonders of the world. This place is one of the most majestic places I've ever been in my life. And they actually shot Black Panther there.
Oh, okay.
and me not even knowing that, this is just part of my storyline in the book, but I love the people. I love the culture of South Africa. It's still for me just be a black man who had never been to Africa before. My first stop was in Ethiopia before going to Cape Town.
Okay.
And I saw, you know, come across a lot of Muslims and a lot of, you know, Ethiopian Jews, Jewish people. And you can feel the culture of almost like you stand in a time. And I didn't explore the city because I was in the airport. But just when you're seeing, you know, the people coming and going, you know, to whatever the destination they had to go to at the airport, you can kind of just feel the sense of the different cultures of the African people.
Got it.
And all in one place. But South Africa, it was a great experience. Even going to the Mandela's, you know, even the Robben Island, they have an exhibit, a museum for him. And you can really, it really takes you back to how strong black people are. And that makes me being proud to be a black man.
Right.
The resiliency they went through during that apartheid period. But you don't see that there now. It's more diverse there than here in America, I feel personally.
And what makes you say that?
You see a lot of couples, a lot of mixed couples there.
In Africa?
Yeah, in Cape Town. More so than in L.A., in where I live.
Are you kidding?
I was laughing to myself. Literally, I saw one girl, a European girl, look like a supermodel with a regular guy, a regular African-looking brother. Just walking and holding hands. And I was like, whoa, you don't see that in L.A. every day.
No, absolutely not. Now, the people around them, I'm guessing, also see that as a normalcy, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Normal, yeah. I didn't feel any kind of sticking in my mind because that's what I hate about if you don't travel, you're really not going to know the real history and the cultures. We only receive information from the news media here in America, as you know. And I try not to believe everything I hear. For example, certain presidents saying, like, you know, maybe we should have, like, people from Africa, these whatever whole countries here in America. The places I've seen in Africa, the most beautiful, picturesque, majestic places I've seen. And I've been around quite a bit now, I feel like, with the traveling of Greece, Australia, and Brazil. It's I want to move to Cape Town, to be honest with you.
Wow.
That's how much I love.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely interested.
I think you will love it. I think you will love it. It would be a great experience. The food is really good too. They're known for their South African barbecue. They have great barbecue. It dawned on me, like, that's supposed to be a universal thing for black people because we love barbecue.
we love a few things. I'll tell you that.
So I love barbecue.
Wow. I want to get back to the book really quick. The main character in the book, is the main character a reflection of someone? Or is he completely fictional?
It's actually the main character kind of is a reflection of me.
I figured that.
Yeah, it kind of. I'm a water sign. Like I said, I always had affinity about Atlantis, and it must be in name after Lenny Nimoy. I don't know, but being a water sign, and I did my DNA. Find out I'm from a multicultural background. Like I said, my mother's side, you know, Native American, my great grandfather was Irish. And I wasn't sure because, you know, with the slave trade, you know, our bloodline's already mixed from that. So when I did my DNA, I found out that I'm about 60% Nigerian. 60% Ghanaian, Ivory Coast, about 30% Nigerian, then a couple other tribes, also South African, and like 15% European.
Wow. Did that shock you?
Actually, it did. It did, especially when I saw like 4% like Russian. I'm like, Russia?
That's a taboo word these days.
Yeah. So, and that's what Alan is. He's a multicultural character, but he's still black, you know.
Got it. Wow. That's awesome. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by your trip. I'm intrigued by the book. And I think we're ready for the audience to hear a little bit of your content. So I think you picked out a passage to read for us.
Yes, actually it's going to talk about the origin, page 32 to verse 34. of the book. Okay, the first Atlanteans lived off of South Africa. They were a hybrid race that came into being many millenniums ago. When the alien spacecraft came to Earth through a wormhole, the Zulus welcomed them on top of a mountain that is now called Table Mountain. An enchanting alien woman fell in love with the Zulu king, and their love for each other created the first hybrid child. The Atlantean race was born. A few centuries later, the alien woman had to leave. She was one of the alien elders who had duties as part of the tribal council in Zion West City. She left her daughter, Isis, with her father, so she would learn the ways of the Zulus. Although Isis had many children with a Zulu warrior before her mother died, Isis, like her mother, was summoned to Zion West to take over her mother's duties on the tribal council. She became one of the alien elders, the hybrid offspring of Isis and the Zulu warrior, or the second generation Atlanteans after many more centuries migrated to the Mediterranean and mixed with the Iberians, living in the area that is now known as Spain. The African gene was the most dominant human gene, and the alien gene was the most superior. The Atlanteans had dark skin and light skin complexion and different facial features being mixed with all three races. These are the people who became your ancestors. Alan exclaims, wow, my Uncle Zadok was right. At dinner time, he would ramble on about Atlanteans, all this stuff that sounded just crazy. I even pretended to agree with my uncle just to make him feel that I believed him because I always thought he might have dementia. But it turns out he was right. Athena flips the page. Alan gasps as he examines the pictures of tall, thin, alien beings with silky gray skin and beautiful blue-green human-like eyes fighting gargoyles that looked to be as twice as tall. He squinted at the page and could see that a gargoyle was a fearsome beast with the head of a dragon and the body of a man from the neck down that had bat wings protruding from their shoulders, hooves for feet, and sharp clawed hands. Athena shakes her head in disgust and says the gargoyles lusted for the alien women. They wanted their powerful crystals so they could rule other planets and devour their resources. Even though the aliens from Zion West were smaller, they were faster, stronger, and more intelligent. They spoke to each other telepathically. Athena touches the crystal around her neck, and Alan notices for the first time that it is almost identical to his. He pulls his crystal out from under his shirt, and his eyes flash blue-green as he admires it in the sunlight. Athena smiles and says the crystals on planet Zion West are plentiful in an area where the aliens live. They have an abundance of powerful crystals, including water and lush green lands to grow food on. Your alien ancestors process their food with the use of their powerful crystals, feeding themselves by telekinetically materializing the food and liquids into their bodies. Your ancestors live across from the red volcanic sea where the gargoyles live. They live in a barren land. They are not able to enter Zion West City. The aliens are protected by invisible crystal force fields surrounding the vast land. The gargoyles don't have technology like the aliens on planet Zion West. They only have the power to spiritually come to Earth, but not physically. The gargoyles own the majority of weak red crystals from the volcanic ocean that would only let them see the nomadic Indians from Earth by entering their dreams.
I think I want to go to Zion West, first of all.
Thank you. Thank you.
But I do want to know why you chose that particular passage to read, because it sounds like, there's plenty of passages in there that are very interesting and intriguing.
Well, I wanted to read that passage. The Athena character, like I was explaining before, she is related to Plato, and she has an unpublished book that shows that the Atlantean kingdom still exists. So when Alan teleports with that crystal necklace from Miami to Australia, when Athena meets him, takes her to her home and explains about his origins. So that's what starts off everything off. Everything started off in Africa, and that's the reason why I want to read that passage. Okay. And Table Mountain, which I mentioned to you before, which I was at. And I'm not sure if you can see behind me is the fantasy map that's in the book that was created by a very talented young man who works with Dr. Dre. And that other picture is me in the Great Barrier Reef. So those two poster size pictures that I have on my wall, it just keeps me focused on my goals to make this the next big Harry Potter or Black Panther. That's my goal, for kids to see themselves in a positive light. But the reason why I read that passage, that's the beginning of Alan's origin.
Wow. Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued. Where did you get the map from?
The map? That's a young man named Kevin Carter who I paid to create it. It all came from here.
Now, there is going to be a follow-up. Yes?
Yes. Yes, the book, right, we're almost done with book two right now. My editor, the lady I was telling you about, her name is Suzanne Potts, who she worked on the Breaking Bad show.
Okay.
So book two is almost done. So many things are happening since then. And the reason why I decided to create a documentary, I'm not sure if anyone ever done that from an author's perspective, because I wanted people to see how great Black people can do things. I did not explain. The first thing I did, Tanya, the next day was on my birthday, which was March 10th. I caged out of great white sharks.
What?
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
That was fun. I enjoyed it. People was like, they're scared of sharks. I'm not. I mean, I'm just a water person. I felt safe. Even though when the shark smashed into the cage, so it like kind of crashed into it on the side, I didn't flinch or anything. I enjoyed the journey. It's part of the book. As you can see, everything I've been doing is through the footsteps of Alan King. He rides great white sharks. I can't do that in real life. So cage diving was the next best thing to do.
So since you are such a water person, I'm going to get a little personal and find out, how often do you get to the water in Southern California?
To be honest with you, not as much as I like to. To be honest, I like warm water. So I got to be in Miami, the Great Barrier Reef. I got to be in Santa Rita, somewhere where it's warm.
Well, I'll definitely tell you this. The water in Southern Cal is a lot warmer than the water in Northern Cal. I'm from the Bay Area. So
yeah, you're right about that.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Deep cities are much more pleasant to stick your toes in the water. So, you know, you get a chance, get on out here.
Yes, you're in Redondo, correct?
I am in Redondo Beach, and we do have some lovely days where, you know, it would seem something that you might even like to do sometimes is when you're doing your writing and your creativity. I actually go out to the beach to do a lot of my work. So sometimes when I can get my mind clear, I will go, just me, myself, and I, and my laptop, and you know, get it going, because there's nothing more inspirational than being right there in, you know, with the water and God's grace.
I agree. I mean, I think what 70% of our body is water. But yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Everything around me and where I live in my apartment, I have some type of reminds me of water. Even my little sound machines, when I go to sleep, it has that ocean sound,
right?
And breeze. So
it just takes you there. Absolutely. I do want to find out a little bit more about you, and letting the audience know exactly how much of your time do you spend researching, writing, and what other creatives come along with Leonard?
Okay. Well, right now, I don't write as much as I used to, because this book has been, it's pretty much taken over pretty much half of my life. The original book, and right now I'm making sure everything is done right with doing the trilogy. But I do, I'm writing a journal too. I'm writing a diary about my journeys and what inspires me, and what really inspires me. I just want to inspire the world, just to show that we can do positive things, big things, as Black people. And my whole goal, my ultimate goal, is once this takes off, I'm going to have a foundation. I do work at Children's Hospital. With my book sales, half the book proceeds goes to a program called Literary Healing. But one program that I'm really fond of is called Jinko Foundation. And one of my good friends, Alpha Manyema's foundation, where they have a hospital in Nigeria where they help give them hip replacements and things like that. They also have a girls' school for Boko Haram. The guy kidnapped some of the girls.
Mm-hmm.
They have a girls' school for that. So I like, you know, attending all of his events when they have big events. David Owalo is a part of it. They now have a really state-of-the-art soccer field for the boys. Mm-hmm. I like to do things like that, but my ultimate goal is to have a foundation where I help kids in a foster care program.
I love that.
You know, a lot of kids in this country, when they age out, they have nowhere to go. And if they don't have an education, they live the kind of hard life still in the foster care system. They're out in the streets. And that's another form of trafficking. People take advantage of these girls. So I've been concentrating on that. When I kind of mentally think about things, it has been coming to fruition. So that's my ultimate goal. Once I do have that power and that voice, that I can really help the voiceless.
I love that. I think we should talk a little more about that offline. I have a couple of things going on with that also. But tell me who benefits most from your book. So who is your target audience? Who gets the most pleasure or learns the most about themselves or the world through your writing?
Well, I can definitely say Black kids, little Black boys, teenagers, and see themselves in a positive light. Even though it deals with real life events that teens go through, even teen suicide, teen pregnancy, even teenage drinking. Actually, now I'm re-editing this book because now I have public schools interested in the book. Mm-hmm. So for teachers, they don't want to read the book because it has part of it, you know, a couple of teens that were orphans and they're kind of like bullies and they drink the alcohol. So that's the only part they didn't like, the alcohol part of it. Portion in the book. So I'm re-editing that part. I have been talking to people into hopefully we make it turn a film, but I don't know how long that's going to take. That's been the ultimate goal.
Right.
But on the other side of me, I just like that now I feel like I'm becoming a world traveler. So I really like doing that. And I'm actually planning another part of the documentary I'm going to do because it does take place in Miami. So I want to do a trip to Miami and go to the Bermuda Triangle, because that's where the Atlantic Kingdom is. It exists in the Bermuda Triangle. But I come from an acting background, and I do like to go, you know, plays and films like that. But just basically being more involved with, like, my friends, Alpha My Name was Dinko Foundation, because he's done great things. And to me, this is a brilliant man, and he keeps me, like, grounded. Just to seeing, just the sacrifices he makes to help people.
So let the audience know where they can, one, buy the book, and two, continue to follow you and your journey and be a part of that if there is an opportunity.
Oh, thank you. You can follow me. Well, LeonardClifton.com has all my social media pages. And once you go on to LeonardClifton.com, you'll see at the very bottom the icons for Facebook, which is Leo Clifton. Instagram is Leonard Clifton Author. Twitter is at Prince Atlantean. I also have Damon John, who's actually promoted a book for me. That's on the homepage also for LeonardClifton.com. LinkedIn page is Leonard Clifton.
Very good. Now, the experience you had with Damon John, how did that happen?
You know what? He had a book, his last book called The Power of Broke. And he had a book signing. I went to it, and I love the brother. I love his energy, and to find out he's a Pisces too. He has that tranquil, just a loving spirit. He's a very humble person, and he just really want to help people. So when I met him and met the guy who works with him, Chauncey. I can't think of Chauncey's name right now. So I gave him a copy of the original book, and it's funny enough, the bookstore, they had it, where they had a signing, the owner put my book in the store. She was impressed with me. So I met Damon again, and we actually did a Facebook Live interview, and I was telling the story about the book when I just actually came back from Australia, mm-hmm. and I was getting ready to go to Greece. So fast forward, after I went to Greece, he had another book signing for his new book, which is Rise and Grind. I met him at Barnes & Noble where I had my book signing, and then I was talking to him, and then he did the whole quick 30-second promotion for my book, because it just came out literally like a week before.
How exciting.
Yeah, ooh, yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, yeah, but for as I'm concerned, until that movie happens, I'm not satisfied. But the way my mind thinks, once I'm at one part, you know, of having the, you know, some kind of success with the book, I'm not satisfied until I'm like at the next level. So I should sometimes stop and pat myself on the back. But until I really can have that type of power to have a film and have a foundation where I want to do to help kids, mm-hmm. that's when I really will be happy and I can say congratulations to myself.
Well, very good. We are definitely glad that we had the opportunity to chat with you today. I'm going to definitely be looking up the Hinkle Foundation. I'll hit you up offline because I do think I want to continue some of these conversations and make sure that the listeners are able to follow your journey. And, you know, keep us updated and keep us posted. And when you have new stuff, let's talk about it.
I absolutely will. Thank you so much. And my Atlanta salute is Hell Atlantis. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And have a good rest of your day.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.